there was little point in keeping our newly installed cell phone zombie detector. As was expected, it was constantly beeping and flashing, and it was safe to assume always a cell phone shuffling vacant person was close at hand. We were discussing what fate might befall the zombie presence identifier. Perhaps something for the mantelpiece, a novelty chew toy for the dogs. Could we convert it into a toaster? It would look rather sophisticated if we could have it beep and flash every time it produced toast, like something out of the Jetsons. As we were deliberating over this very pressing issue, there was rather the heavy thud on the door, followed by another, a series in fact, and the door did tremble in its very hinges. We exchanged glances, and it was decided that the person with the least inspiring idea for what the zombie detector would become would investigate. I wish I hadn't suggested a beeping toaster now, as I approached the door and opened it. There stood Lindsay, and flanked by two towering reptilians. Well, that wasn't something you saw every day. They propelled her inside and proclaimed their displeasure at her snooping around and spying on them on the real side. Seems Lindsay was rather encourageable and had been getting up to shenanigans in her dreams. Just as well, many reptilians were now on their process of awareness too, and these two were amongst those awakening, evidently not too amused with being spied on, but at least they were of the kind that they wouldn't be overly aggressive. And considering they were 8 feet tall, this was a good thing. One of them was also female, and I can't imagine anyone trying to steal her handbag. She had attempted to apply lipstick, perhaps feeling it would create rapport, something humanly familiar to ensure better species interaction. I wasn't going to suggest that she ought try restricting the lipstick to just her lips. She had smeared it across her scaled face, and managed to even get some on her male companion's head too. I agreed to maybe attempt to moderate Lindsay's real side activities, but secretly I was most delighted at her embarking on her own awareness-enhancing adventures as I ushered her inside, and the two reptilians faded from sight. We all took our seats, discussed a little of Lindsay's activities, and prepared for more dream recounting. This was what Lindsay was here for after all. She had simply been intercepted by the reptilians en route, and now settled, she was eager for more real side escapades. I wondered if our dreams would stimulate still further Lindsay's want to go where she had never been before, all the more reason to proceed. A very apocalyptic dream now, just to start on a light, easing everyone into the dream evening experience. Great floods swept the planet, a flood of monumental proportions. Reports were flooding in, as were my puns, of this catastrophic world occurrence. As is often the case, I was with a group, but we had our own little island, and for whatever reason, this island was safe and secure from the disaster, at least relatively so, for we did experience a degree of flooding, but nothing that would compel us to construct a Noah's Ark. We were in the aftermath now, and who knew as to the fate of the world. As you can appreciate, everything the world once had been was rather waterlogged and not as functional, including communication networks and media outlets, and so no information could be gleaned. There wasn't seemingly too much to do at this moment, and so I decided to explore our little safe haven of an island. Who knows what secrets it might reveal? As I took my philander, I came across another group of individuals, so it seems we didn't have the island all to ourselves. I ventured closer. These individuals were walking with their heads down, seemingly trying to draw as little attention to themselves as possible. This was rather an ambitious hope on their part, as they appeared to be bipedal dog-like creatures, so far from inconspicuous, and they shambled along in single file, and each had a backpack strapped to themselves. I half imagined the bags containing dog bowls and tins of pedigree chum, but kept such musings to myself. It's possible they wouldn't appreciate or see the funny side. Despite their obvious want to not be disturbed, I simply had to investigate, always fascinated by aliens, reptilians, and anything of a decidedly exotic and non-human persuasion. They were very reluctant to engage. Their shaggy wolf heads remained lowered, but not to be denied or discouraged, I persisted in trying to grasp their attention and have a dialogue, assuming they could actually speak. Maybe I'd try a few barking sounds. But even as I considered my communicational options, one broke off from the group, and even though reluctant, he did accompany me to another part of the island. It transpired that, yes, indeed, they could communicate, and no barrier of a communicational nature was between us. He was insistent that we remain concealed. And thus we nestled behind a suitably large rock, and he posted a few of his kind as sentries, scanning the area with their canine eyes for sign of any approach. I wasn't entirely sure as to the necessity or reason for such measures, but as he continued to speak, it became more apparent as to these precautions. They revealed then their true identities. They were masterful at the art of shapeshifting, an ability they utilized to conceal who they actually were. They were Native American Indians and were constantly pestered and interfered with on the real side for all number of reasons, and thus they had taken to adopting these guises that they might be left alone and remain unrecognized. Many things he did divulge to me, but as is often the case, not all can be successfully brought through from the real side to the physical on waking. But I was safe in the assurance that it was received by my real self, and so nothing of the dialogue was in fact lost. Other than the explanation for their chosen forms, I did receive a confirmation of what Dwayne has mentioned in regards to many, if not all, of the alternative media information providers. They were all, in fact, deceptors, con men, working for the dark forces, and not to be trusted. Those conspiratorial orientated individuals, the David Icke's of this world, etc. He divulged other names too. Other prominent and world-renowned popular speakers of this nature, but I won't make mention of their names. I feel it unnecessary. Naturally, Lindsay wanted to know the names, and she held my zombie detector beeping device to ransom until I loosened my name-withholding tongue. But my lips were sealed on this matter, and would only unseal on the explanation I now gave as to the dream. Lindsay sighed as I pointed out that it was a heads-up dream, one of upcoming disasters and upheavals. Lindsay declaring the glaring apparency of that statement, the culmination of the continued demise of the planet, due to decisions and choices by the masses, the cause and effect, ramifications due to the constriction of awareness, aided in no small part by the controllers and their subconscious programming of humanity, and the inevitable consequence, creation spiralling ever deeper into blackness. Lindsay was impatient to learn more about the details of the dream, about the magic island and the curious dog people. The island represented safe haven for those who have connected to their real awareness and embraced their process of recognizing the all is and standing real with the universal guides and all of life. Lindsay wasn't too impressed. We had, after all, suffered still a little flooding. If one were going to be with the is, at least they might expect sunny weather and not get their feet wet. Not to be baited, I proceeded. I had dreams of this nature before, where the new friends, those who are electing to become more aware, choosing no longer to contribute to the destruction of the planet by retracting their agreements that cause this demise, and with their intent to supersede it all, not be the effect of their unawareness and no longer subjected to literalized programming any longer, that these individuals are kept safe, and everyone else who decides to remain with their created personal selves only will have to experience the cause and effect situations they have contributed to through remaining unaware. Fascinating was the ability of the Native American Indians to shapeshift, and understandably so, if they were being as pestered as that individual suggested. That they were also on our island of safety suggested that at least some of them had the awareness too, or at least on their process enough that they were stepping into the new nowness of the is, beyond cause and effect creation, and by doing so, removing themselves from having to suffer the karma they would otherwise be in agreement with. That they were choosing to be segregated from our group to a degree suggested maybe a slight differential in the extent of awareness connection between them and us, but enough that they could share the island and be safe from the tumultuous floodings. Seems no matter how hard she tried, I simply wasn't going to concede to Lindsay that this was an actual island and could be located, and so I couldn't give her the coordinates so she could take a vacation there, hide in a tree, and wait out the disaster. It was a demonstration of removing yourself from the creational cause and effect principle through awareness and standing real. And yes, I assured Lindsay, there are bound to be other actual islands out there, and maybe with exceedingly tall and flood-escaping, should one clamber up to the top of them trees. And finally, on the subject of these alternative researchers that the individual in the dream had highlighted, enforcing what Dwayne had revealed about how they are simply peddling information, and knowledge alone has nothing to do with real awareness. Indeed, the information alone will only have people restricted in creation, as they latch onto the generally emotionally stimulating ideas, and assume through them they now are safe. But you won't be taking the information with you when you pass over The only thing you have is to whatever extent that you are aware, and on learning of the reptilians, people will draw the attention of these scaly characters, and they can then expect even more attacks and unwelcome taplines. And as the knowledge will stimulate emotional reaction, the hysterical masses, having learned of the dastardly reptoids and their evil plots, can expect more attacks and self-imposed restriction through the cause and effect result of their emotional outpourings. The controllers don't mind if the slaves learn of their foul deeds. It simply steals the attention and focus of the masses, causing more restriction, disregard of awareness, and future unconscious slave lifetimes. It's all in the awareness, and the likes of David Icke and others may provide information, but deliver nothing in regards to the solutions. The is never mentioned, the taplining, or the universal guides. They are, in fact, setting people up for future lifetimes, and effectively are working at the controller's behest. It's possible they may not even realize they are doing this, or the fact that through their activities they are likely to be reptilian themselves. If their focus is mainly in their physical, astral, personal selves. Lindsay was curious how many people were, in fact, reptilian. It was generally hard to determine. Most would not be as apparent as Lindsay's reptilian escort from earlier. I suppose, were you to have 8-foot green scaled lizards stomping about the streets, it would rather give the game away. Maybe you could tease them out of their shells and disguises by dangling a rodent before their eyes. Or perhaps they might reveal themselves through being curiously overreactive. If one were to, say, be sporting snake skin handbags, or suggesting that snakes make exceedingly good and novelty doorstops. Lindsay was asking me as to how regularly she did frequent my real side arena. Her presence was consistent. She was always around somewhere, occasionally joining me on an adventure here, a little sight-seeing trip there. She fluctuated between interest and utter dismissal, so it was impossible to tell which version of Lindsay I would encounter. On a few times she had actually attacked me, so it's safe to say she wasn't in a very new presentation accepting and receptive mode on those occasions. Often she was with her husband John, and he was adamant about his position and conclusions. Virtually anything I said was met with scorn and incredulity. It was to the extent he would, I'm sure, argue as to the colour of grass, and if I announced rain, he would simply have to go out and investigate, and even then he may not believe me, as raindrops bounced from his self-convinced cranium. This would lead me into another dream, as here again I was in the presence of Lindsay and her unyielding husband. Was it worth my mentioning anything beyond the mundane? Perhaps I ought to speak of the merits of fat-free chips, discuss how night follows day, how peculiar it is that dogs sleep just like humans. You know, the sort of topics to expand one's awareness by and delve into subject matters never addressed. Not that the price of fish today wasn't today's hot news, or could take a back seat to any other issue, but I launched into a mini-lecture about 5G, its dangers, the threat to humanity. Maybe it would affect the price of fish too. Who knew? It certainly would affect the availability of fish, as it was designed to kill anything living. Alas, my words fell on non-receptive ears. As I was about to switch topics, the very next word frozen on my conspiratorial lips, the scene would fade, and I was in my place of work. Well, this was proving to be a very long night, and here I was at work again, of all the places in the universes of endless imagination I could have been. And if that wasn't boring enough, I was having one of my usual hair-pulling, teeth-grinding, and emotional vehicle overloading days. Then, before my bored eyes manifested, of all people, a familiar face from the physical level. He is, in fact, my next-door neighbour, and named George. Maybe he was doing some real side shopping, as my place of work was a supermarket, buying some real side peas, or some magic beans that hopped into your mouth. No cutlery required. Far more entertaining could even the most mundane of activities be on the real side. But seems he wanted to reveal to me his actual identity, and wasn't interested in the dancing real side carrots. Who he was beyond the role he assumed on the physical level. Unbeknownst to the vast swathes of bewildered humanity, the very seas incorporate species and civilizations of beings that choose to remain hidden and yet boast far greater technology than the land humans. Duane wrote in New Book 8 extensively about his dealings with the merfolk, and yes, there surely have been physical level occasional sightings of these sea-dwelling individuals, but never documented to the extent that Duane has. Well, it transpires that George is in fact one of these sea beings, and although adopting a human form at this time, he is in fact one of these sea beings. He is in fact a sea being of high rank and standing. In the face of such revelations, I moved from my overstimulated emotional personal self into my real self, connecting with my real awareness to learn more, to glean more insights, and communications flooded in keeping with the whole sea theme. It was communication of the telepathic kind from sea creatures the world over, as naturally they didn't have access to the standard telecommunication technologies. It was hard to imagine a fish with a cell phone. My goodness, imagine the cell phone zombie affliction reaching the very seas. It scarcely bears thinking about. But anyway, they confirmed what George was telling me, and assured me his words were true. George has been stationed at and has lived as our neighbour since before we settled in the street we still reside at, when I was just a 5-year-old. It was revealed further that he is at his post in a guardian capacity. He is protecting Peter and Gwen, my parents and I. Not so much on the physical level, He isn't battering any villains and never dwells over the head with his trident, but it's more a case that he is holding back to a great extent the ill intents and actions of the dark forces on the real side. Lindsay wasn't very impressed. I felt it unlikely she would accept my communications with the sea creatures, let alone that one of them lived as a human, at least on the physical level, and was keeping all the ghouls and monsters at bay. Nevertheless, I continued, pointing out how the real side reveals all, and as moments pass, we begin to determine who people actually are beyond the physical level facade. Those who are sincere and pure beings, and the opposite. And I conceded Lindsay's suggestion that yes, old Mrs. Kettle from down the road could be a villain in disguise. She always had a tendency to brandish her handbag in a very aggressive manner, and I'm sure that loaf of packaged bread under her arm always seemed to have a peculiar over-sharpened end. For sure, the dark forces may well have stationed their minions as our supposed friends and associates, in order to cause disruption, distraction, and through agreement to their supposed friendship and benign countenances, taplinings. And if that fails, activating seemingly harmless old ladies and bringing dangerous wheat-based products to bear, I would never look at a sandwich without suspicion from henceforth. And counterbalancing this, the ease has positioned its own sincere representatives in close proximity also, those of greater purity and awareness, as protectors of a kind. Lindsay was quite correct. George never had made any mention of this. It's unlikely to be something one could drop into a conversation. How's your day? Good weather, isn't it? Oh, and by the way, I'm a sea creature protector from the deepest depths of the ocean. It's possible these individuals, like George and the Deceptors, may realize their roles, but only if they have the awareness to recognize and see this. If they did not, then they would be carrying out their functions, missions and agendas, completely oblivious on the real side. Their personal selves would have no knowledge of this naturally. On the real side, unaware people are incapable of concealing who they actually are. Through awareness will you first acknowledge the other life levels and vehicles, and be able to connect with them. And if you wanted to conceal yourself as a result, your real intentions, then you could regulate your other vehicles. But only aware individuals will be able to see and do this. But generally, they are more inclined to be aligning with the is and demonstrating the qualities that wouldn't need to be concealed. Obfuscation unnecessary. Only the dark forces and deceptors then would need to hide themselves on the real side, as they do on the physical, to walk amongst us unseen, their intent concealed. But they would lack the awareness to be able to keep their other vehicles in check. Whichever way you addressed it, the real side revealed all, the go-to place for verifications. So it was revealed who George actually is. He may realize this if he has the awareness. If he doesn't, then it seems he is a character of good intent, as the real side version of him seemed to be. As moments go by, it will be fascinating to see how this develops, as I am now made aware of George's identity. We shall see who else is revealed as the players in our experience are made known. Lindsay picked up the house phone and pretended to have a conversation, thrusting it in my direction. She proclaimed it to be Moby Dick on the line, and he was selling me some double glazing windows. Through my awareness, I was able to glean a trace of satire on Lindsay's part. There was an outside possibility she wasn't buying this particular real side dream experience. I had to shudder involuntarily as I thought again of the cell phone zombification reaching the seas. Fish were one thing. Imagine an octopus, a cell phone in each tentacle. Due to the addictive quality of the electromagnetism, octopuses would surely take advantage of their extra limbs that they could better get their digital fix for the day. I had one further dream to tell. In light of Lindsay's reptilian companions of earlier, the recollection of this dream had been then unearthed, and here I would find myself on a radio show, a real side radio show, that had rather a ring to it, in the company of other presenters. We had quite the entertaining mix of conspiracy-orientated matters. Goosebump-raising harrowing phenomena tales, and crowbarring open the closets and unveiling the skeletons the globalists had secured there, in some cases entire graveyards spilled forth from the closets. One of the co-hosts was none other than the renowned Alex Jones, and thus it was guaranteed to be a captivating show. Perhaps we looked under a stone or several that we should not have, as we touched upon rather a sensitive controller subject. For as a result of our agenda revealing defiance to the dark forces, we were forced to abandon the studio and go on the run. We were hunted men, the dark brats electing to apprehend and silence us. We bundled into a car and attempted our escape, and the evil ones pursued us in their own vehicles. A tremendous car chase unfolded as we navigated the terrain at breakneck speeds, bullets whizzing and buzzing over our heads. Seems the controllers were beyond polite conversation, and more direct methods were employed. We managed to lose them, and parked our vehicle in a secluded street, an alleyway, far from prying eyes and stray bullets. We were deliberating over our next course of action, which was brought to a conclusion abruptly as we heard the footfalls of an advancing group. They didn't appear to be the pursuers of earlier, but naturally we were on our guard as one of this group separated and approached us. He raised his hands placatingly and allayed our qualms, assuring our safety. They seemed to harbour no ill intent, but seemed as cautious as us, as they were armed, their weaponry seemed very advanced and high-tech. They made it clear that they cared not for our situation and plight. They had, in fact, another purpose and agenda. They looked human, but as it transpired, they were alien. The only visual indication of their alienness were their sophisticated technologies. Perhaps, if they wanted concealment, carrying Star Trek guns wasn't the way to go about it, but it was what it was. They revealed their purpose for approaching us, and unleashed, from their bag of extraterrestrial tricks, a very elaborate scanning device. They intended to use this and determine which one of us was the father of a developing alien embryo, scanning it across our bodies would apparently reveal this. We agreed that they could proceed, and thus we were each scanned, and apparently I was the father. I didn't remember any interactions with aliens lately that could have resulted in a baby. What would the neighbours say? The scene then switched to the very lab the alien was growing in. It was encased in a cylinder of amber fluid, so appears this was not to be a natural birth. At least I wouldn't have a very irate mother bending my ear, so that was somewhat of a relief. And no mother seemed in evidence. And considering the species of the embryo, maybe that was just as well, as it was reptilian, and developing very rapidly, it would appear, growing before my very eyes. I even witnessed her birth. It seems time was on a fast track here, as what stood before me now was a female reptilian. It appears the aliens wanted me to not only be present at her birth, but that I might be a presence in her life as she matured. We bonded, it seems, from the moment of her birth, and her accelerated growth had her transition into an infant, then to teenage years. She was every bit a reptilian, green-scaled, an elongated snout like a lizard, and sporting a tail, bipedal, just like a human. And even as a teenager, she stood at my height. I can only imagine how tall she would become. I wouldn't be sending her to her room if she failed to complete her school homework, that was for sure. The main reason for my presence in her life was that I would exemplify more socially agreeable ways of conduct that would impress upon her, as her species were inherently of a more aggressive nature. We were communicating verbally and telepathically. We seemed to get along famously, and her more abrasive attitudes became more levelled and moderated due to my involvement and influence. This surely was a reptilian that any species would be delighted to have in their company. Lindsay found it understandably amusing about my being a real side father. Apparently sharing the is wasn't all I was up to on the real side. Again, I had to cite that I had no knowledge of fraternizing with reptilian females, and besides, who knew what dimension, life or place in the psych realms this had taken place. The dream was predominantly my demonstrating myself, my willingness to share, and not along the lines Lindsay was thinking of. The sharing of awareness inducing information on my real side radio show. And in fact, I had a few dreams where I had co-hosted with Alex Jones. So maybe I am constantly sharing wherever or whomever I happen to be across creation. The dark forces agents, as usual, displeased at my doing this, and made their feelings apparent as they did pursue us. Unlike other dreams, where the antagonists were sometimes myself, or my personal self, made apparent as attempting to kill them was futile, and the attackers never ending in their quantity. Naturally, Lindsay wanted to know about my being an intergalactic father. Was it rather like West Side Story? Was the missus about to burst in and accost me for being irresponsible? I suggested, however, it was a glimpse at a hybridization program. This was very real and in effect. The reptilians were infertile, a condition resulting from their choice to eat meat as a result of food shortages caused by a very exhaustively lengthy war with the Syrians. The meat had altered their biology, and so they had to resort to an alternative means of perpetuating their species. For a time, they had been fertilizing human women for this very reason, but it seems now they are perhaps broadening the operation to incorporate human males too. Along with this, they are attempting to lessen the more aggressive attitudes and characteristics that have been a stable part of the collective created consciousness of the reptilians that resulted in them being the most warlike species in creation. the influx of human DNA will have a genetic bearing, and coupled with interaction with the human volunteers, assuming that the participants, by and large, did volunteer, will produce less warlike and aggressive generations of reptilians. The reptilian hybrids are regarded by the purebloods as a lesser species. And perhaps then the trauma of this is reduced also with the interaction with the volunteers, that they don't feel so abandoned and neglected. If I did sign up for such a program, I fail to recollect, but it didn't strike me as a potential snare or awareness-inhibiting pitfall. One must be always cautious of agreements that result in restriction through taplining and any misdirection of focus, as I always endeavour to maintain my focus with the ears and not be distracted by creational phenomena in all its varied forms. Lindsay was inquiring when the wedding was. As I was a father, it seemed only proper to do the decent thing with the mother, and would she look good in white? I imagine they would have to make adjustments to allow for her tail if they were intending to put her in a wedding dress. But I would now suggest another possibility for the dream, another viewpoint. Maybe it wasn't as it literally appeared to be. Prior to this dream, and months ago, I had real side encounters with both Dwayne and Rebazar. Both suggested that I had limited time in my current position, and as I detected no impersonating dark side subterfuge, I acknowledged the words of the genuine beings. On top of that, I had seen strange anomalies floating around my room, and even though Lindsay pointed out how there were plenty of anomalies in my room, including my good self, I had the awareness to determine these to be cancer manifestations, and a few had latched onto me, so possibly I was thus afflicted. Perhaps then this reptilian female wasn't my child at all. Yes, the hybrid program is a reality, but what if I was getting ready to pass on, and this hybrid was to be my next life position? In the dream, I was overseeing the reptilian exactly as the real self, who creates the vehicles we inhabit, and that the female had contact with me in the dream suggests that maybe I was representing the real self, and the reptilian female, my soon to create and inhabit personal physical vehicle, and the connection was due to how I had either maintained my awareness in the next position or was able to re-establish it. To recognize the is a process that may take not just one lifetime, but thousands more. And if my time here is limited, I may well find myself in another position. On an intergalactic level, the reptilians are coming around and are interested in their awareness. Now the suppressing royalty and their leadership has been removed, a new dawn for the reptilian race. So a position that might have at one time seemed a disadvantageous one for awareness, a backstep due to poor cause and effect choices, may now be the opposite, a position where awareness can flourish as readily as being a human, and with the reptilians being telepathic, aware individuals amongst their species would assist the species as a whole, as the entire species would automatically be aware of everything a single individual was thinking or focusing on. One final point I would make on this, however, as I could see, Lindsay wasn't too taken with me being a reptilian in a future lifetime, was that with awareness, we recognize how we are always the decider. Yes, things can happen, and indications and demonstrations suggest this or that, but ultimately we decide our life and what we agree to. Yes, becoming reptilian at this time would perhaps be beneficial for one's awareness and the whole of life, but would it not be more prudent to remain here rather than be repositioned and attempt to re-establish the connection to the is, of which there was no guarantee that this would be so. The personal self would always be there, and could be more adamantly opposed. So perhaps I would then decide to remain here, maybe for 1,000 years, maybe forever, until my journey to the is was complete. I had the awareness now, I can decide. Lindsay liked the possibility of me being around forever and bombarding her with conspiracy information and dark forces activities for eternity, even less than my being reptilian. Maybe to be as annoying as possible, I would decide to be an eternal reptilian instead, and pester Lindsay with conspiracies across the cosmos with my telepathic abilities. But I had spoken for long enough, and it was time for Peter to take the floor.
Lindsay looked at me and said, "Go on, Pops, your turn." Okay, well, this was no dream. It happened in the physical. I drove out to visit someone in Bletchley. At the premises of the person I was going to see, there were rows of parallel parking bays. I parked in one and clambered out of the car. Walking across the pavement, I suddenly seemed to be propelled forward at some speed. It was as if I had been violently pushed, although I felt nothing touch me, and there was nobody around anywhere near me. I crashed sideways on into some metal railings running parallel to a building wall and about a foot away from the wall. I ended up on my knees. I smashed against my right arm and seemed momentarily stuck there, unable to move and free my arm, although it was not jammed between the railings but rather positioned diagonally across them. I managed to get up in a bewildered state. I'm sure I had not tripped, and even if I had, I do not believe I would have moved so fast and so forcefully into those railings. Needless to say, my arm was horrendously bruised, black as coal, for several days, over a large area, and hurt like hell. This event seemed like the culmination of a succession of notably bad days, when nothing much went right, and indeed my office, computer, printer and photocopier all decided to play up or break down. The following day was a notably good one, so I guess the attack, for that is what I am sure it was over. A few days later, however, the alternator on my car packed up. I hope things are now back to normal. How do you feel about it all? It sounds terrifying. My feelings about the whole thing? We had been warned that if we accepted the new you ideas and started to pursue them, we could expect such things as we were, to say the least, annoying the dark forces, who do not wish us to know of such things. We were also told we could expect protection from the real guides. I believe I was very much protected. I could have broken my arm or even split my head open, which would have been disastrous work-wise and every way, but the real guides managed to prevent such a thing. When I discussed this with Kevin, I mentioned that looking back over my life, now almost 73 years of it, I have always felt protected and looked after by persons or things unknown, whether it be most recently from crazy idiots on the motorway, or a staggeringly near miss from a solid ring of steel or iron that came crashing down from a tall building I was walking past in Luton 4 or 5 years ago. It missed me by about a yard at most, and rolled past me before falling to a halt. If that had hit me, there can be no doubt it would have taken me out. As I said to Kevin, this was some considerable time before I came across the new you, and he made the point that the real guides mark us out as potential new you material long before we actually come across it. For my part, rather than be put off by what was one of a succession of otherwise totally alarming events over a number of years. I know now why I have always felt protected and helped at various crises in my life, and I say let the cowardly dark forces bring it on, if that's what they want to do. Rather than put me off, they have simply confirmed I'm doing the right thing and strengthened my resolve to continue. When I got back to the office, I shouted loudly, "New you," in defiance. So what did Dwayne say? Oddly, before our Skype started, two of the other New You folk were having a discussion about psychic attacks and comparing notes on their own experiences. Dwayne confirmed we could all expect more of the same. Really, as wake-up calls, the real guides will let them happen, but will not allow any serious outcomes to occur. Ended up on my knees, symbolised to the dark forces, my kowtowing to them, but not to worry about that. Any dreams now will be a bit of an anticlimax. I suppose so, but I did carry on and relate two that had occurred recently. Go on. Well, I was in a large posh house where there were a lot of people. Apparently it was a party or some sort of get together. It was all very friendly and pleasant. Then I went upstairs looking for a loo, and passing the open door of, I presume, a bedroom, I saw this large, beautiful snake coiled up on a chair. What was it? Was it a big python like the one we used to have? Or a Fred? Fred was the name of a beautiful corn snake we owned for a number of years that eventually grew to 5 feet before passing over at about 22 years of age. The Burmese python got to 12 feet before we decided she had outgrown the large vivarium I had built for her and was handed over to a collector who was going to breed from her. No, not either of them. In fact, a big king snake, about 6 feet or so, though hard to tell as it was coiled. Oh, they're the ones that eat the rattlers and other venomous snakes, though non-venomous themselves. That's it. While strongly resembling in their red, black and yellow or white stripes the deadly coral snake. Clever stuff, eh? Keeps away the predators. Red to black, you're all right, Jack. Red to yellow kills a fellow. Exactly. Worth remembering if you're ever in the wilds of America. This one was a red to black. Anyway, I exited the room in some excitement to attract the attention of anybody nearby. But when I returned, instead of the snake, a large furry pussycat sat there. It was in the same colours as the snake, but in broad patches rather than stripes. A red, yellow and black house cat? Yes. Well, anything's possible on the real side. Anyway, I now found myself on another part of the room, or perhaps another room, faced by a long bookcase virtually filling a wall. I say bookcase, shelving really, as only one level contained books. But there must have been 20 to 30 of them, all identical in appearance, and having some kind of writing or pattern on them I could not quite see, until I looked at the very last one, which bore the simple legend, Peter. There the dream ended. I concluded my telling of this by giving my own thoughts on it. What were they? Well, I guess the books were symbolic of past lives, only the last one revealing its contents to me. As regards the snake, I felt the fact it was, if you like, a sheep in wolf's clothing, inasmuch as it was a harmless creature, to humans anyway, masquerading as a deadly one, and ultimately turning into a pussycat. Might have referred to how I felt about myself in at least one past life I have been shown. Dwayne basically felt I had got it right, particularly concerning the books. As he said, these have already been written. The other dream I related on this occasion was a bit short, but rather fascinating. Oh yes, what happened? Well, I was in a large field. There were many people milling about and talking. It was in daylight, I believe. Then I noticed up above a beautiful flying saucer. It was white and silver in different parts and shaped like a cowboy's Stetson. The upper part seemed to be rotating as the whole thing steadily made its way across the sky. Suddenly a man nearby raised a rifle to it. I told him not to be so stupid. Then I heard somebody say, OK, it's probably just a reflection from a street light on or something. A remark made all the more inane by the fact there were no street lights to be seen in any direction, and as I say, it was not dark anyway. That was it, really. Duane said this really showed people's different reactions, the defensiveness of the man with the gun, and the denial of the other person to something that was to come. I was to see what happens. At that point, one of the dogs suddenly seized a slice of cake from the coffee table, causing great hilarity, and the end of the evening's proceedings. We hadn't seen that going to happen.